Good evening, everyone.
What I've left behind, you want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for listening to NASCA, the National Association of Adult Survivors of Childhood Abuse. Tonight's show is scan number 2846, and we do have a very special guest tonight. Her name is Mary Ellen Spoonhauer from Berkshire, New York. She is a returning NASCA family member. Before that, she shares some of her story, I do want to tell you a little bit about NASCA, what NASCA provides. NASCA stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. We are a nonprofit, self-supporting through our own contributions, child abuse, trauma prevention, intervention, and recovery. So we have a single purpose at NASCA, and that's to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so only with two goals: educating the public, number one, and especially related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, CSA, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. And number two, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. And NASCA also provides so many platforms that there's a contact list. Yeah, there's a lot of primary volunteers and ambassadors, which Mary Ellen is an ambassador for NASCA. There's videos and highlights. And there's programs, in the news, articles, and stats. You can find a lot of platforms needed for anything regarding to like physical abuse, emotional and mental trauma, and neglect. So once again, I do want to thank everyone. Today's January 31st. And we're getting ready to get into that wonderful time of year heading into spring. And before I bring Mary Ellen on tonight, I do want to take this opportunity to thank everyone and ask you for this opportunity. Tonight's guest is Mary Ellen Spoonhauer from Berkshire, New York. She is a returning NASCA family member. She shares, "I grew up with five siblings. I believe if you were to ask them to describe our upbringing, they would tell you a story of life in the country with many happy experiences and being raised by our father, who loved and cared for his children and was admired by many, many in the community. But Mary Ellen's story is different. It goes more like this. It's as a very young girl, my mother drove away, leaving me at the hands of a man who ripped my childhood from me and tore my soul with years of sexual abuse. I lived in fear and shame." And she goes on, "I don't know what causes a predator to choose one child over another, but I do know that as a child, analyzes it as there must be something wrong with me. Like I thought I must not have as valuable as my siblings, and I was not deserving of being loved or protected. And through many, many years of counseling, education, and her own experience, Mary Ellen shares the long-term effects of childhood sex abuse, and her lengthy and not limited to depression, anxiety, abandonment, relationship issues, grief, eating disorders, PTSD, and a life of constant vigilance. And she relates, as an adult, I often find the strength to get by in the eyes of my four beautiful children. And now, as a young adult, they and their children continue to be my greatest blessing. And I can share too, the fact that I am a survivor. My dream is to impart hope and a sense of strength in others. And I have a voice, and I will share my story. And that's so beautiful, and a lot of us really do stand right by your side with this, because we all are affected by everything. So I do want to bring Mary Ellen in to the show and welcome her.
Hi.
Good afternoon, Mary Ellen.
Oh, I'm so pleased to have such a nice invite, and I appreciate
you. Thank
you
so much for joining us. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, Mary Ellen. It's such a privilege, you know, to have you with us tonight. I tell you, we also have Nancy tonight. Nancy Brown is also an ambassador for NASCA with us as a host and a co-host. So welcome, Nancy. I'm going to bring Nancy right on into the show tonight, if it's okay, since it's us three. Is that okay?
That'd be wonderful.
Oh, great.
Hi
Nancy.
Everyone. Good evening. Good evening. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for having me as well. Thank you, John. And thank you, Mary Ellen, for sharing your story tonight. I'm really looking forward to hearing your testimony. And thank you for being with us tonight. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm happy to help in any way I can.
Thank you.
It's always a blessing to be able to visit with NASCA and the group. I know I gained so much from being able to open up to the site, and whether it be come on the radio show or look at what they have to offer, the information, the support that you can find there is just amazing, and it's been so beneficial to me. And I certainly encourage everyone that needs the help to reach out to this group.
Well, thank you so much for that, Mary Ellen. I know that's such a wonderful thing for you to say. I wanted to ask you if you want to, you know, just kind of give us maybe a brief description on how your life was, you know, growing up around your children. I mean, your brothers and sisters like that. And knowing, you know, that this abuse was going on with you, that must have been unbelievable. I mean, it's just horrific, you know. So how did you come out of that and become, you know, the ambassador that you are to that? So tell us the story.
You know, when I was very young, I did not recognize my father as my father because he had left our family. And then there came a point when my mom took his home and left us there. And I, for years, remembered that as being such a terrific piece of abandonment, you know. I felt so abandoned. Like, how could she leave me? I was 5 years old and screaming in the driveway for her as she drove away. It wasn't until the recent past, maybe 5 years or so, that I found out that she really had been hauled into court, and my father had made the judges believed that she was incapable of raising us, and he took custody. Of course, that wasn't the case, but she had no way to fight him. She was beat down and scared to death of him. And I didn't know that as a child, you know. Like I said, it was just in the last 5 years that I found that information out. And just feels like years were spent feeling, believing something different, because he fed off that. He brainwashed us to believe that she truly didn't want us and she left us, and he had to take care of us. I think the abuse started that very day. I really do. I remember him coming and just screaming at me to shut up and get in the house, stop crying. This is, you know, he wasn't going to deal with it. And we sat down to eat, and I was so frightened. I couldn't eat. And I ended up developing an eating disorder that lasted, well, I still struggle with it. I'm still in counseling, but at a much different rate, you know. It's under control. Now I do therapy for maintenance and healing rather than the necessity because of where I've been. But I remember not being able to eat due to the fear in my stomach. Just felt like a knot, and this horrible man that was so violent, running everything, you know. And I don't for the life of me understand, but my siblings always adored him from day one. They connected with him, and they just had a totally different relationship.
Do you know if any of your siblings were abused?
They've always told me no, and I have to honor their whatever, you know, their memory. But I do know that he was physically abusive with all of them. That was his way of controlling things. We had a stepmother that he was very violent and beat terribly in front of us. This is what women deserve, because they don't do what's expected of them and such things as that. I don't understand how children see things like this and are not deeply impacted. It's always haunted me. I think they have their own issues, but they just don't relate it to the stuff we grew up with. I think they'd feel much better if they could recognize it.
So this is John back. I had a connection loss going there for a second. I don't know what happened. Sorry.
Okay.
I did want to ask you about the siblings. I never did get to hear that. Did you say that you could or you couldn't share that?
No. What I was saying was they've always denied that they had any sexual abuse. But he was physically abusive to all of them. But they always look back at that as just a form of discipline, you know. He was a very violent man.
Sorry to hear that.
Know,
I really am.
It's just very haunting, you know. But I know clearly I have memories of the sexual abuse starting that year at age 5. And the memories are very vivid. And I never understood why just me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If I was to be sick and couldn't go to school, I knew I was going to be sexually abused that day. So I would force myself to go to school no matter what. I could remember throwing up on the bus. I was so sick, but I didn't dare stay home, you know. I remember being in...
So you lived in fear about every day, huh?
Yes. It was looking back at the amount of fear I don't know how I don't know how I survived it. I really don't. I don't know how I became a strong person.
That's a question that I don't know if anybody can answer. You know, Mary Ellen, it's such a dark, deep, long, you know, question that
I think it all depends on each person individual, you know. And I know that I kind of get mine from helping other people, you know, the most that I can. And I'm sure that a lot of people, you know, feel the same way. I mean, what about you? Do you feel like that you get, you know, a lot of satisfaction that helps with all of this by helping other individuals?
Absolutely. The more I can be of help to someone, the happier I am, and the stronger I feel. Sharing my story always helps. Currently, I'm working really hard to make sure that I do that, you know, be supportive of others that are going through stuff.
Right. I do want to back up a little bit and ask you, you know, something about your earlier situation about your mother. If you don't want to answer it, you know, I'm just curious, have you ever made contact with her, know who she is, what happened with that?
Okay, so my mom left us with my dad when I was age 5. Somewhere around, I guess, 8, she started coming back just for quick visits. He would allow us to have quick visits. Now, this whole time, he had convinced us that she wanted nothing to do with us and had left us because she wanted a happy life, is the way he put it, whatever. About when I was 12, right about 11, I guess, my mom and dad started spending time together, and she moved back home as though nothing had ever happened. And that's one of the really freaky points about this, was that they picked up where apparently they had left off, as though nothing happened. And throughout this time, I'd been living in this horrible, abusive scene, and now she's back, and it continues, and she's, like, numb to it because her focus was on making him happy.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, it's so hard. Both of my parents have passed now, and it's so hard looking back at how the situation used to be. By the time I was 12, the sexual abuse had gotten really bad, and we ended up having an accident at the house, and my brother passed away. He literally died, I say, at the hands of my father. If you want, I can tell you a little of this. He was, like I said, my father was a violent man, so he was a horse trader, and he had my brother in the barn with him training horses. One of them was very wild, and he was screaming at my brother to get behind the horse and whip it. Well, my brother was crying and telling him, I can't do that, I can't do that. And the next thing I know, I heard this horrible noise, and it was the horse kicking my brother. I'll never get that sound out of my head. But
God, you heard that, huh?
I was outside the door. My dad had told us we weren't allowed in the barn. We had to get out. And this happened right after I left. So my brother was in intensive care for 3 months, and then he died. The doctor said he died.
So was that your older brother or younger brother? That must have been your older brother.
He was older. He was the oldest of all of us, and I felt like he was our protector. he always made everything
was
okay.
Was he aware? I hate to ask this, but was he aware of what was going on? No?
I don't believe so, but I know that he did his best to protect us. Like, he knew my dad was violent, and he always tried to keep peace in the house. And I remember being so frightened when he died, because I thought, what is going to happen now, you know?
Right.
At that time, when once he passed, there was a big fight with my mom and dad. And they got in a fight over what happened to my brother. And then somehow I got pulled into the middle of it. And my mother was like, just look at her. Just look at her. Well, I didn't know what she meant. But I, looking back, I know she meant that I was depressed. I was not eating. I was skin and bones. I was always a wreck with anxiety and depression. And I'm only 12 years old, you know. And when...
That's because you were neglected.
I was neglected. I was living in fear, and I was being sexually abused all the time.
Oh.
And
I'm so sorry for you, Mary Ellen. I really am.
When,
you know, the empathy I have for you is unbelievable. You know, because that was about my age also. I don't know what it's like to go through something like that. And, you know, too... when after your brother, you know, passed away and stuff, was there another older brother?
I had one older sister than myself, and then I had three younger siblings, sisters.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was just wondering, yeah, okay. Okay, well, I'm sorry to interrupt you on that. I know that I was looking at, you know, some of the effects, though, that going through this time, you know, what you experienced, and I'm looking at some of the effects also that you talk about, you know, by experiencing, you know, what you did, and there's so many things here between, you know, grief and eating disorders and PTSD and depression, anxiety and abandonment. It's all those things that I think all of us have experienced as being, you know, sexually abused as a child. You know I have. I don't know too many people that haven't, to be honest with you, you know. And that's why I'm
absolutely
so happy that you are coming out with these words. It really means a lot. So can I ask if maybe Nancy would want to come in and
sure.
talk to you a little bit? Hi, Nancy.
Yes.
Are you there?
Yes, John, I'm
Thank
here.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to ask you to come on into the show a little bit and talk
yes.
with Mary Ellen for a little bit.
Yes. Hi, Mary Ellen, again.
Hi, Nancy.
Thank you again. Thank you so much for sharing your story. It's so brave of you. Is this your first time sharing your story, or have you shared it before?
No, I have shared it before, yes. It's pretty intense. but, yes, I have shared it. Of course, you know, there's, like all of us, there's select people that you could do that with, so... NASCA
right.
is one of the safe places, right?
Definitely.
And that's why I encourage people to come to the show, you know, to reach out, because it's definitely one of the safe zones where you can speak your feelings
yes.
and talk about the effects and know it's
right.
okay.
And definitely, and you sharing that is, you know, helpful to so many of us that are still going through our healing journey. I had a couple of questions for you. So you said, are you the oldest daughter?
No, I have one sister older than I.
Okay.
And
so
then
you do
three
have
younger.
An older sister. And then three younger.
I do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did you ever talk to them about the abuse while you were small? Like, who was the first person that you told,
you know,
that
when
you opened
I,
up to?
When, yep, when I was young, I didn't say a word to anybody. When, right about that year when I turned 12 and my brother died, everything kind of took a whirlwind.
I
was at school one day and I tried to write a paper about stuff that was going on at home. That paper ended up in my father's hands, so I was threatened because of that. That shut me down big time. Then when my mom and dad had the fight that I was referring to about me and my brother, he beat her really bad that day. And he told her, he said, "You get these kids out of my house or I'll kill all of you." Well, we left. And it was the first time I felt like I could breathe normal. We found a place to live, thankfully, with a friend who helped us. And life began to feel like I thought it should. And then all my siblings left us and went to be back with my dad. But before they went back with my dad, my mom questioned all of us. And I'm not even sure what brought this up. But she said, "There's something I need to ask each of you." And she said, "Has your father ever sexually abused anyone?" And I said, "Absolutely, multiple times. This is what he's done to me." And I spit it out in detail. And she just sat there stunned. Well, all of my sisters were like, "No way, that couldn't have happened. You're lying." And, of course, they're young, you know, and they wanted to be with my dad. And so they ended up leaving at that time, and she said, "Do you want to go?" And I'm like, "Never in my life will I ever go back." And so I stayed with my mom at that time, who, I don't know, by the time I was 16, she had run off and left me again. So, as an adult,
your mom?
As an adult, we were able to rebuild our relationship, but I would definitely say my childhood was a mess, and the effects have been lifelong. So,
right.
Yeah.
That was very, very, that was a lot. I cannot even imagine what you were dealing with trying to process all of that and still having to deal with your brother's loss in such a tragic way. Did you ever notice, like, did your father drink? Did he do drugs?
You know, my father, we grew up on a farm in the country, mm-hmm. and we were pretty much isolated from society. Mm-hmm. And when, now I'll say, like, I can visually remember my dad drinking beer. He didn't drink hard alcohol. He never did drugs. But my sisters always said, no, he didn't drink at all. But I'll tell you one thing. The smell of his brand of beer would, as an adult, would trigger my PTSD instantly. If I was to walk into a crowd and somebody was drinking the brand of beer that he drank, I knew it.
Right.
And I felt unsafe and on guard immediately.
Yeah.
And I, you know, and they can tell me all they want that he didn't drink, but that I can remember during the abuse, that smell. So that saying that the body holds the trauma, there's so much truth to that, you know. There are so many little triggers that will just set your body off. You have no control over those things, you know. It's maybe you learn how to react differently to them.
Right.
But I don't know if so you can stop it from happening. You know, like that panic that sets in.
Yeah, and I'm sure, too, that all of us can agree that all of the disorders that we experience by these triggers set us off, you know, and into certain directions. And a lot of people experience a lot of reactions, you know, off of being triggered. It depends on
you know, what kind of reaction it is, whether it's short term or long term. And mm-hmm. and this, here's the sad part about it. I'm sure that y'all, you know, can understand it, that some of these short term experiences can be very dramatic and hard. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. really, really put somebody away in the hospital and different things, and even worse, you know. And then we have long term effects. You know, mm-hmm. you know, experiencing, you know, the post you know, traumatic stress disorder and mm-hmm. and many other things. You know, so right. it is a long road between one and the other. But there's, I look at both of those two as being, you know, handled in almost the same way. However, the one that's short term is probably more of an emergency, where the long term is, you know, doctor oriented, therapy oriented. And no matter how, you know, well, what kind of therapy now, that could be anything in life. Okay, so what do y'all think about that? You know, about the types of therapy that people, you know, use besides going into, you know, EMDR and things of that nature. I'm talking about personal therapies, you know, like music and nature and art, you know, and
absolutely.
Things of that nature. So what do you all like to do? Go ahead, Mary.
Something I found very beneficial when I went into treatment for my eating disorder. The first time that I went into treatment for it is when I freely started talking about the sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. And it was like up until that point, which this was back, I think 1996, the first time I was in treatment. And I up until that point, I had spent my life trying to figure out, why can't I forgive this man? Why can't I make a relationship that's good with this person? Instead, I'm scared to death and don't want to go near him. And I felt so guilty because my siblings had this wonderful relationship with him. And at that point, I was like, wait a minute. I don't have to. I don't want to, and I'm not going to, you know? But you really got to give yourself that permission. And I think I learned a lot about that with art therapy at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a relief to just sit there and draw and color and express what you're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd be amazed
so
at
what
will come
did?
Out.
That's
I did.
What you did.
Yeah.
You drew pictures and things of that
absolutely.
Nature.
Absolutely.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, that's
yes.
wonderful. Yeah.
Right. I did. I love to be in nature now.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time when I was afraid to be out in nature because it felt mm-hmm. unsafe.
Right.
I love it.
So that's what,
I absolutely
that's what you think
love
it does? That's what
mm-hmm.
you think nature does for you? You feel safe and you feel
I
secure
do.
Where you are? Uh-huh.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
because of the environment that you're in at the time, right?
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So do y'all find that maybe that y'all would go to these places more often as you know, being a victim and using it, you know, or relying on it, so to speak, for your therapy, like on a normal basis? Do y'all do that yourselves now?
Yes. Yes,
uh-huh.
I do.
I do, too.
Yes.
How about you, Nancy?
Feel that going to what was the last part of the question?
Well, if you kind of go to like rely on like either like we nature every day, so to speak, just to find, you know, find some tranquility, some peace, you know.
Yes.
So yeah, well, I mean we're talking about using that every single day
absolutely.
At a certain time if you can. Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. Growing up, I grew up. When I was younger, right, much younger, I grew up in Costa Rica. And one of the things that I used to do was go outside and sit outside in nature and just play with the bugs and the ants and the little spiders, anything. I was just so into
uh-huh.
nature, grasshoppers, stop, you know, just forget it. And that's still something that I actually enjoy doing. Like, I actually like
mm-hmm.
being outside and looking at the things around me. I think
right.
that's very therapeutic, and it helps to take my
mm-hmm.
mind it's just
right.
peaceful. It's like, wow, this is such a beautiful creation. How was this created?
Yeah.
And it's just, you can really just take it in. It just takes you to a place of peace. I love looking at the sun. I take pictures with the sun behind me, different angles, even if I look crazy doing it, I don't care. I mean, those are things that, so art therapy, I used to draw when I was younger. I went to art school for a little bit. You know, those things helped me to take my mind. So I agree with you and what you're saying. You know, I was listening to you when you're talking about a lot of things I was listening to, but the eating disorder and how it was, you know, eating disorders normally is like you're seeking for some form of comfort. You feel good, you know, maybe you're dealing with, like, the way you look. You don't feel that you look good enough. What were you dealing with, right? What were you going through during that time that you can, like, now look back and say, wow, you know, I could see this. Like, this connects to that. I was dealing with that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I've learned a lot about myself through that. My eating disorder, I know, started out of fear. The knot in my stomach would not allow me to eat. My throat felt closed because I was so frightened. I couldn't breathe. I felt like I couldn't speak. If I spoke, I was going to get beat or I was going to get screamed at. Putting food in there was about impossible. So, it was times like that I know started my eating disorder as a young child. And when I was out of his range, there were a few years I had no issues. I was doing good as a teenager in a new environment. I blacked out all of the past. Like, I didn't want to focus on it. I didn't want to see it. I didn't want to remember it. And I thought I could have something new. But it creeps back in. And it's there. And you have to deal with it. By the time I got to be in my early 20s, I got married. When we would come into difficult situations, arguments of any kind, my eating disorder would trigger. It was the first response when I was in an uncomfortable situation was to restrict, to stop eating. And that got worse. By the time I was in my 30s, I had to be hospitalized for a really bad episode with restriction. And that's when I finally started seeking the right therapy and learning how to cope with things differently and being allowed to express it, talk about what had gone on that everyone else felt was normal and to me was like there was nothing normal about it. So I must be the odd one. There has to be something wrong with me, right? If everyone else is feeling that these things are okay, then why can't I deal with life?
Well, those people were not dealing with what you were dealing with. You were dealing with a lot.
Yeah. You know, now looking back, I can see that, I guess, I've learned something called the highly sensitive person, and I believe that describes me. I pick up on things, and I need to know right from wrong. I need to know that everyone's safe, you know, and I can't cover it up. I can't ignore it. I can't turn my head.
Thank you.
So many people can. You know, so many people will just turn their head, well, that doesn't involve me. I didn't see it, so I don't know. I can't be that person. I have to, if I see it, I'm going to speak up. And especially, you know, when it's a victim of any kind. So,
and you're doing that. I think right now just sharing your story, you know, coming on tonight and sharing your story with all our listeners, I think that you're beating the giant. Every time you do that, you're so strong. You've been through so much, but
yeah.
You're so strong.
Well,
yeah,
thank
that's
you.
The most important part.
So brave.
Yeah, I mean, you're finding right. that strength. You're finding that strength, you know. And,
yes.
And,
mm-hmm.
and that's what you even write
that's
in
amazing.
Your bio. You know, it's right there.
Yes.
And that's
it
what's
is.
So beautiful about it. You know, too, there's a list that you kind of say is lengthy. Can we ever in our entire lives really write a list of words of what affects us, you know, due to, you know, being a victim of,
mm-hmm.
of child sex abuse? I mean, there really is not. I mean, all you can do is put highlight words there. But, you know,
yeah.
when you get into emotions and different things of that nature and, you know, isolation and, you know, there's so much involved that you know, you can actually go on all day of just writing things about the way it affected people, you know.
Absolutely.
And earlier you said how, you know, you just got to deal with it. You just got to learn how to deal with it, you know. And that is the biggest part of how do you learn how to deal with that. And, you know, I think to me and everybody else that's here can agree and a lot of the public, hopefully, that, you know, it you can't do it all by yourself, you know. However,
mm-hmm.
I think that the therapies that we talked about, you know, of going into nature and different art and different things of that nature is
mm-hmm.
always helpful ideas. You know,
yeah.
And I think the fact too that looking at Mary Ellen's story, you know, technically, I mean, she has been through, you know what, okay,
mm-hmm.
and she's got extensive, you know, damage done because of what happened to her. But here's the thing: she is using that for her strength, you know, and that
right.
is the most important key that we take out of this tonight, you know. It really is. And,
that's
and
amazing.
I really want to thank you so much for that, Mary Ellen.
You're welcome, you know, and it is true. Once you can recognize that the issues you are dealing with,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
that's not your enemy. That's where you're going to find your strength is right there. Confront your issues and build off them and reach out to help others because there's so many that are suffering with the same things and just don't know where to look for help.
That's the main thing. That is the main thing. They don't know where to look for help. And I'm glad you said
mm-hmm.
that. Okay. So if I can just take a quick second and let's get back on that subject about not knowing where to look for help. Okay. If I can just take a quick second to shout out, you know, to the guests, you know, a call-in number for everyone. And tell everyone
mm-hmm.
about NASCA website. And so now's a good time. We just talked about communication, and I think that this would be a perfect time for that. So tonight, if everybody's tuned in, you know, kind of late, thank you for coming on to the NASCA show tonight. And this is scan number 2846, and our guest is Mary Ellen Spoonhauer, and she's from Berkshire, New York. Tonight, if y'all want to call in, we do have a guest call-in number. It is 1-646-595-2118 if you'd like have a comment or a question for our guest tonight. It's always appreciated, and thank you again for listening in. So we were talking about, you know, communication and what to look for. So what do you think are the keys for people to actually start to reach out in their life?
I would say that if you're struggling, find someone safe that you feel comfortable talking with. NASCA is a great resource, and they've got many options. People that you can speak with, there's therapists, there's articles to read. They can direct you to someone in your area. I know I've recently, well over the past 3 years, been a member at my local church, And we have a group called Celebrate Recovery. It's based off from healing with hang-ups, habits, and hurt. And we have people with all sorts of issues in our group. And I've recently been asked to be a leader member. So that's very, that just melts my heart that they would see that I had that ability and come to me and invite me to do that. And it reaffirms to myself how much growth there's been over these past several years of the issues I've been faced with and continue to come up against and how I've learned to handle them. And compassion. I think compassion is huge, you know. If you can have compassion for another person, and when you share your vulnerabilities, it allows them to share theirs. And if you see someone that you think might be hurting, just reach out and, you know, offer to listen. You'd be amazed at what somebody may have to share that they could never do before.
Amen.
Yeah, those are some beautiful words. What about you, Nancy?
Well, I had a question I wanted to ask you about your siblings. I know you said that they never confirmed or agreed to any type of past sexual abuse, but did you ever, like, take one of them by yourself and just try to say anything to them, like, hey, I'm going through this? Like, how did they find out about it? Did you ever try to reach out to them? Because they were with you a lot, right?
They were with me a lot, and I don't know why he would pass over one and choose another. I remember when I was extremely young, he would tell me that I reminded him of my mother and how much he hated her. I don't know. Is that his reason? Did that justify it? I never understood. My siblings and my dad had a totally different relationship, and even to this day, they still they honor him. I don't understand it,
right.
But
mm-hmm.
I know when my father was passing, I hadn't seen him in years, and one of my sisters called me up, and I mean, I'm very close with my sisters. But they know that was a part I was not going to, you know. And when he was passing, one of them called me up and said, this is the last time you're going to have to make this right. You need to come to him and apologize and make things right.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, are you listening to what you're asking of me? I did nothing wrong. I will not be there, and I will not apologize for cutting the ties and protecting myself over these past several years. And I told her, I said, I'm here for all of you after, but I will not be there. Mm-mm, no. Everybody
so
handles things differently, but yeah.
So they did not believe you. They did not support your story.
I think they believed me. They wouldn't support me, and they felt like it should never be spoken of.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Was there anybody in the community that knew what was going on, or any other aunts or uncles that may have observed anything
you know,
that you know of?
No. I had two neighborhood families when I got to be around 10, 11 who
They didn't live right next door because, like I said, we live in the country, so we would have to drive to get to their houses. But each of them had asked if I could come and help with their children, kind of like have their children were real little, and I, like, be a mommy's helper and just play with the kids while the moms did housework, whatever. At one point, my father showed up at one of these houses, and he insisted that I leave with him. And so I left, and as we were leaving, he stopped the car and said to me that the two families had been discussing the fact that I was sleeping with the Hartsons. And that I would never be allowed at either house, and that they didn't want me. They hated me, and they didn't want me anywhere around. Broke my heart. Wow. There was no truth to it. Broke my heart. But to this day, those poor women have no idea what he did, you know, that he, I knew it was a lie. There was no way they would have said those things, and nothing inappropriate had ever happened, but I think he felt me gaining confidence and friendship in these people, and that put him in danger, you know? So he had to create a wall where there was no contact.
Wow.
Yeah. And then there was, like I said, there was the point where I tried to write the English paper in school. The teacher said to me, are you okay? Did you mean the things you wrote in this paper? Those kind of conversation, real quick, like, and I was like, yes, I wrote that, and I needed to write it, and I met the things I wrote. And he's like, okay, just go on in the classroom. Everything's fine. And he passed the papers out to everybody, and mine didn't come back. And I didn't know what to think. I thought I was in trouble. I thought, oh, my, he's going to yell at me. I'm going to go to the principal. I don't know what's going to happen. Instead, I got off the bus that day. My dad, my stepmother at that time, maybe it was my real mom. I don't even remember who was there. I know my aunt and uncle were there. I think that some neighbor friends were there, not the ones that I liked, but friends of his. All sitting at the kitchen table, and he called me over when we got off the bus, and he pulled the paper out, and he says, they'd all been sitting there at the table discussing it, and he said, did you write this? I said, yes, I did. Did you mean the things you wrote? I said, yes, I did. He said, I will never forgive you for this. And then he proceeded to tell me that apparently I wasn't as smart as I thought I was, because the teacher was a longtime friend of his and brought it to him, brought it to him as a friend. And to this day, I don't know if that teacher thought he was going to put an end to the situation by confronting my dad or what. But in my dad's words, I kind of nailed my coffin, sort of, because now he knew that I was trying to seek help, you know.
Yeah. I'm lost for words on that. You know, it really takes my breath away to hear that, because it touches me so deep that I live that same situation, Mary Ellen. I want you to know that I was working on an English paper myself when I went for help, and actually wound up abusing me over it. You know, but I know that feeling. So I want to know what you were thinking about between the time that he took the paper from you and then showed it back to you between that time. I mean, it had to be on your mind constantly, huh?
I was so scared. I was so scared.
I was shaking.
I didn't. I knew
I had done something really, really dangerous, and I was petrified. Yeah. And still to this day, I think about the group of people sitting around the table when I walked in, and what, none of them are going to question why I'm screaming for help, you know?
That's the thing. I'm just going to come out and say that they should be held responsible, you know, as any adult that knows anything about this going on. You know, it's like, yeah, if you see something, say something. However, cover-ups are lies, okay? That's
absolutely
what they are.
Absolutely.
And when it comes down to saving a life or not saving a life or putting a life in jeopardy of, you know, long-term effects like we've been talking about all night, this is exactly how it happens, you know? And I'm so sorry that all those people knew about that. That's terrible, absolutely terrible.
Yes, yes. So when you say, did anyone know you were being sexually abused? Well, I mean, there were groups of people who should have known, mm-hmm. and unless they are, one, either accepting of it, or two, going to turn their head, how do you not know?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a good question, because you did say that earlier. You said, you know, I'm not going to turn a blind eye. If I see something, I'm going to say something. And you say that because mm-hmm. you were that child who did not have someone who did that for her.
Yes.
You know, and when they did it, you know, they probably did it again, you know, like, a friend trying to make sure to keep everything low, and maybe he apologized and said he won't do it again, but he used it to put fear in you so you wouldn't open your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Manipulated.
Yeah, it was constant fear.
Do you know if he ever abused anybody else?
Do I know if he ever did? I believe he did. Years after I had left home, he was with another woman. One of her daughters came to her mother telling her that he had sexually abused her, and the mother thought her daughter was lying to her. I went to that mother, I looked her in the face, and I said, I don't care how angry you are at your child. So whatever might be going on, because there were lots of behavior issues because of it. And I said, she's telling you it happened. You need to believe her it happened. It happened to me. You believe whatever she tells you. And she just would have no part of it. And I think those were only... Like, I think that child was one of the more obvious, and still she was to blame. And there were probably many prior to me.
Mm-hmm. Michelle, you know, I'm just wondering if anybody else tried to reach out at any given time. Have you heard of anything about that at all later in your life?
No.
No. Mm-hmm.
I haven't. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just so sorry. I mean, that is just devastating. You know, and two, I know that you're reaching out to people all over the place and you know, talking about your story and being so, you know, so strong in the way that you're telling it. Too. I mean, it is truly a blessing that you're here tonight. And also that you're using, you know, the eyes of your four beautiful children to, you know, basically find your strength. So tell us, you know, kind of what that's like and why, you know, you're doing that.
I ended up being a single mom myself, with four children, and the struggles of trying to raise them on my own. I think, as you can imagine, it's tough, but I always found them to be such blessings, and still to this day, they're grown adults, the biggest blessings I could ask for. I think I told myself from day one, I will not be the parent that I had. Things will be different. So I raised them hoping that they could see just how much I loved them, you know. We never had a lot. I didn't buy them things. I was there for them. You know, I supported them emotionally. I always made them aware that they were my top priority. And I think those were the things that I needed as a child. You know, I needed to know it was safe at home. I needed to know that somebody cared. That didn't exist. And so even though I was single parent because, well, my marriage broke up because of alcohol. My husband was an alcoholic and got to the point where he was abusive and violent. And those are all triggers to my PTSD. And I couldn't live like that. And I didn't want my kids living like that. So we divorced. And I just made myself a promise, you know, if you live life doing what's on your heart for the best of your own health and those that matter to you, somehow you will get through it. Whatever the struggles are, just keep your priorities in order. And I think that was always my goal. And now they're very happy adults and have families of their own. They run into their share of problems, but I think they handle them well. And I know that no matter what the situation is, they know they can come to me.
That's a wonderful, wonderful relationship, you know, that you built, you know, by living everything, you know, that you've been through. And now the result of the love that you have inside of you, you know, that person that you've always wanted to be is being shown with your children.
Yeah.
You know, and my life is similar, you know, because I wanted my children to have that same, you know, life or the education, the whole nine yards, a beautiful life. When I say that, I mean a life that has not been affected by child abuse, you know.
Yeah.
And that's what it gets down to. Or really any kind of abuse at that matter, child sex abuse or you know, physical, all of it is really traumatizing.
All of it.
And to lead to everything that we're talking about tonight, you know.
Yeah.
So I do have a caller that called in by the name of Buzzy. He wanted to comment and leave a fairly short comment on the show tonight. Is it okay if I bring him in, Mary Ellen?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Buzzy.
Yeah, how are you guys doing tonight?
Hey, we're doing good, Buzzy. How are you doing tonight? Yeah, tonight is our special guest night, and we do have Mary Ellen Spoonhauer on here. Do you have a fairly, you know, a short comment or a question that you wanted to ask her or say to her?
Not ask her or anything. I mean, I was a victim when I was younger. I'm in my 40s now. I had something real weird happen to me. When I don't know how much I can say and, you know, what kind of words I can use here. But
well,
when I was younger, I was put into foster care. When I was 6 years old, I had a woman, Lady Margaret, used to take care of, you know, just take care of people in the neighborhood. That was kind of the way we did it. Where, like, you know, if your mom was a little screwed up, you would just go to her house. She would kind of foster everybody in the neighborhood.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have a little bit of an issue because, like, she would force me to force feed me liquids, so I would urinate at the kitchen table, so she can, you know, use that to her advantage, you know, smell my pants, my chair, whatever her thing was.
Yeah.
And it made me, like, real, like, reclusive my whole entire life. Like, even though it wasn't that horrible, she didn't really hurt me. But I've always been a little weird about things, especially, you know, like, I can't urinate in a room around anybody else still to this day.
I think that your reaction is probably very normal, because she was abnormal, right?
Why?
And it doesn't matter the degree of abuse. Abuse is abuse. And when things happen to us that we are so frightened by or uncomfortable with, those things stick with you. They are in you, and nobody was there to protect you. So
yeah, my mom was in prison, and she knew that. So she used to yell at me. She was like, "What are you gonna do? Where are you gonna go? You got no parents. Screw you!" Like, she would treat me like that. She was, you know, you piss, and she would make me pee at the kitchen table, and then she would make me give her my pants. Which I thought was kind of, you know, even at 6 years old, I'm like, that's kind of weird. Why do you want my pee pants?
Buzzy, that's exactly, you know, kind of what we're talking about here, is that the long-term effects of things that happen to you when you're young, you know, and there's a lot of things that do come into that, you know, so that's what we're talking about, you know, with and you bringing that up, you know, so what kind of long-term effects are you experiencing? Because we're talking about things like, you know, depression and PTSD and things of that nature, and so what about you?
I'm going forward. I mean, I understand these things have affected me in some way or another over the years, but I'm definitely 100% going forward. I'm involved in a, maybe it's a bad thing, but I'm involved in a group out of New York that is catching people that are trying to solicit children.
Okay.
And bringing them to the forefront, exposing them to the world for what they've done.
I can let you know that that's a very important subject, okay? And we do talk about that many, many times, you know, on through the NASCA shows, you know. So, listen, I'm going to have to get back to Mary Ellen Spoonhauer's story tonight, okay?
Okay, well, I'm going to keep listening to the show. Thank you, guys, for what you're doing.
And listen, another night, maybe we can tell your story, okay?
Yes.
And stay in touch, because it sounds very interesting to me. And I really do want to thank you for calling in, because it is another example of what we're talking about, you know, here. So thank you so much, brother.
All right, thank you guys so much, and I'm...
Okay, Mary Ellen, so you heard that, you know.
Yes.
That's something that we have to consider with any type of abuse, you know. And
absolutely.
That, you know, I know we didn't have enough time to talk to him, but that might even come into another fact with him with eating disorders, you know, because he was sitting at the table.
Sure.
Who knows, you know.
Absolutely. Just like I said, I was fearful while I sat at the kitchen table. And that's where I started my restricting. Yeah. And like I said, everyone's abuse has similarities and differences. The impacts are huge.
Right.
It might not be the exact same, but the way it affects your life moving forward, I'm certain that me saying when I smell that particular brand of beer, it triggers memories, emotions, feelings. I would think probably as he was trying to explain that odors would do the same, trigger memories and fears, you know, like he spoke about needing to be in the bathroom alone. So it's a safety mechanism so that we can handle our emotions and do what we need to do on an everyday basis.
Right. And, you know, he's talking about actually a wedding, you know. And,
right.
And I know for a fact that I deal with so many different types of abuse, but all of them have another similarity, and that's long-term bedwetting. You know,
yep.
It's very, very common that they go up into their even teens, you know, late teens and stuff. So, yeah, we definitely understand, you know, where he's coming from on a lot of things due to that.
Yes, absolutely. It makes a difficult time trying to socialize when you're in the middle of these types of emotions. It's much easier to isolate than to try and keep your emotions intact and be out socializing. For me, anyhow, that's how I find myself when I start slipping into patterns. I call them patterns of isolation and restriction and depression. When I start falling into those patterns, I know there's a trigger behind it. And I have to find a way to bring myself to a spot of peacefulness and a spot of recognizing that, how is it they say it, you are not what happened to you, you know? You're a beautiful soul that deserves to be happy and safe. You are not the abuse. You didn't ask for it. The people who perpetrated against you and those that were not there to protect you, that's where the blame goes, not on us.
Right.
So
it's definitely not your fault, right? It's not our fault, right?
Exactly. But it takes a lot of work to recognize that and to believe it.
Absolutely.
Sure does. Sure does.
Yeah. Yep.
I know. I had an episode just the other day. I've been saying I'm doing so good, you know. I feel happy. I can talk on and reflect on things and not feel triggered. And then I slipped and fell in the shower. Not a big deal. I had some bruises. Thankfully, I wasn't badly hurt. I was a little frustrated myself. What a sight, the water everywhere. But a couple of days went by, and the bruises got really tender. I was sleeping, and I rolled, and I felt that pain, and it must have in my subconscious triggered a memory, dreamed a horrible nightmare that I was being attacked, and I woke up in the morning literally sick. I had a headache, I was nauseous, and I knew it was because the pain made me fearful in my sleep. A subconscious that I was going, that I wasn't safe, but that wasn't true, and my body thought it was true. And so I said, nope, today's a day of healing, and I took the day off work. I laid around, I took a nice shower, I did my hair, I got dressed, I went and spent time with my grandson. I was like, this is going to be a good day, and this is going to be a happy day. But you have to recognize when you're in trouble and take care of yourself. Do something that makes you feel safe, something that makes you feel good about yourself. remind yourself just how far you've come and the things that you've overcome and all you have to offer.
That's so true. Taking, commanding your day, taking control of your day and being able to see the tricks of that toxic spirit that's trying to come in to have you to feel sad, guilty, not good enough, worthless, all those feelings. But you recognized it and you spoke against them. You were like, no, today's a good day. You know, today's a day of healing. And you started to call those things forward. And you started walking. Yes. You said, you know, the little things. I tell people, the little things you do. Do your hair that day. Put on your lipstick that day. Put on some lashes that day. Take a shower that day. Make your bed. I mean, little things that you're struggling with when you're fighting. Those negative feelings, right? Those little things that are great. I don't care if it's one thing off that list. You're going to make that day good. And you're just going to keep on saying it. And it's going to happen. Good things will come.
That's what I'm talking about.
I'm glad you
did
that.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Wow.
And, you know, that's so beautiful. Thank you so much, Nancy, for that. That was wonderful.
So true.
You know, John, back earlier you mentioned going out in nature. One of the things that I started doing during the COVID shutdown back, not this year, but last year when it was really bad, I felt like the walls were closing in on me. And I'm like, no, I can't let this happen, you know? And you turn on TV and everything you've seen was ugly and dying and fearful and scary, right? And I think people that struggle with issues anyways were hit really hard by that. And I said to myself, spring started to roll around and I was like, I am going to go for a walk every day and I will purposefully look for something beautiful. Mm-hmm. And then after a couple of days, I said to myself, I'm going to take a picture of those beautiful things because I want to remember it and I want to come back into my home and be able to just open up that camera and look at those beautiful pictures and know that the world is a beautiful place.
And, you know, I love you, the fact you said that. I'm going to tell you a little story real quick before I bring in another caller, if you don't mind. You know, you're talking about that, and you're really describing what I do every day in my life. And I'm going to tell you all what I do. Like, I have a King Shepherd, beautiful dog. I take him down to the Mississippi River because I live real close by it, and I collect driftwood. Okay? Beautiful, beautiful, exotic pieces of driftwood. And, and you know, you're talking about bringing art back to your house with your pictures, and I'm bringing it back to my house too, girl, you know. And believe me, my garden now has became a unique piece of driftwood all over around to the side of my house. And it's at least 100 feet long, and I have pieces among pieces. But these are beautiful, beautiful pieces of art, you know. So I'm glad you mentioned that because that's what I do, you know.
That's amazing.
It's such an important piece of information to people that are listening to us tonight. It really is. And so thank you for bringing that back up. And listen, I do have another caller. Is Bill here? Bill, did you want to speak?
Yeah, that's me. Yes, I do.
Hello, Bill.
I just want to, John, thank you very much for noticing I came back on. I've been listening, Mary Ellen, to different parts of the show, but I got a call in the middle of the show, so I missed a bunch of it. However, I just wanted to say thank you because I really do think you're a wonderful example of a person whose recovery is really strong and, you know, came a big distance. I've always thought that, and I wish you'd come around more often, but I'm really grateful that you did volunteer to do this tonight. And, you know, I wish I'd have heard. I'll go back and listen to your story again, but thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate it. I'm glad I caught your message and responded and got the opportunity to come on tonight.
when Mary Ellen, for those who don't know, is one of the people who, when I put out like an emergency call for guests, she answered. Thank God. And we still have, we don't have anybody for Wednesday, so if somebody has an idea, let me know. But most of the gate dates beyond there, we're in pretty good shape. But anyway, Mary Ellen has not been with us for a number of years, and I don't know uh-huh. where you went, but we missed you. Okay, Mary Ellen. Okay.
Thank you, right. Bill.
Let me give the show back to John, but with my gratitude for to both of you for a good show. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank
You're
you.
Welcome.
Thank you, Bill. That was Bill Murray, the president of NASC. And without him, I don't think any of this would be possible tonight. It has been a wonderful show. Also, we do have another caller. If she wants to come in and ask a question or comment, Mary Ellen, is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Okay, let me see. Let me unmute. Hi, thank you for calling in to the NASCA show. This is John, and our special guest tonight is Mary Ellen Spoonhauer. Who am I speaking with?
Hi, my name is Regular Girl, and I want to first of all thank Mary Ellen personally for doing what you're doing here tonight, because I just can't say enough about how crucial I think that it is that that survivors and victims begin to tell their stories out loud. And I almost have this sense there's a window we have where we're able to do this, and that it's really important. So I just really want to thank you for doing this. And I wanted to comment at the point where I was listening to the other caller talk about and you talk about triggers, but I also want to read just this couple of sentences that you wrote in your bio, which is
okay.
related to this, because I love how you said this. Now I lost the place. After many years of counseling, education, and your own experience, you now know the effects of child sexual abuse, CSA. She says, the list is lengthy and not limited to depression, anxiety, abandonment. But remember, it says lengthy and not limited to abandonment, relationship issues, grief, eating disorders, post-traumatic stress disorder, and a life of constant vigilance. The other part of your story that I want to touch upon, because I identify with it so much, is that I have two siblings also. And so I'm really piqued my interest when you share here in your bio about how the other five siblings have a very different story. So once again, I want to thank you for telling us your memory, your accurate memory of what happened. Mm-hmm. And so I was in, real as briefly as I can, but I have to say this in order to tell this little story for others. I want others to hear this about when you first start to understand that that's what the, whatever it is that's troubling you is related to your accurate memory of the abuse. So I was in 12-step programs for years, but one of the things that happened is that also I was recruited and I worked as one of the first counselors in the substance abuse field, even before alcoholism was determined as an official disease so that the insurance company, so this was the very early beginnings of 12-step programs. The information that I had digested about alcoholism and addiction was that it was mixed. It was mixed, and it was mixed in the literature. And this is crucial because this little story I'm going to tell you. So, but I was really involved. That was my whole life. Those were my friends. Okay, but we were not, this is like, we're talking, this is the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s. So the one piece of information was that alcoholism and addiction was a physical thing. Now, and I don't want anybody to interrupt me about the three-part thing. The fact was, in that book, somebody was trying to say it doesn't have, and we had people who shared. I had a happy child. They would stand up there from the podium. They had happy childhoods. It didn't have anything to do with their parents. It didn't have anything to do with abuse. However, I ended up being a substance abuse counselor, what I would have to do these intakes. And me, on my own, in addition to my own personal experience, experienced that as I did these intakes, like, sorry, there's some kind of correlation going on here. Because all of the young men who began to talk about, most of them talked about abuse. That's what they were doing there. That's what I started to see. You see?
Yeah.
And also in 12-step, there is a piece where you take responsibility for everything. Everything. And it also says that alcoholism and addiction is a, they just use the word alcoholism, it's a symptom of deeper underlying conditions. Now, that's different than you're just born with a different body, like a man who has no legs, because they use that as a metaphor. Alcoholics are like men who have lost their legs. They never grow new ones because it's a physical malady. We're wired differently, and that was the talk. See, so one day, as I started to get involved in more service work, like I had years of sobriety now, more so than most people did in the early 80s, and I was very young, I started to get involved in service. And I started to become aware, more aware of the impact that the abuse did have on me and my siblings. I could see it as I became educated, because for the training to be a substance abuse counselor, I had started to take psychology courses. So there was some education now going on regarding, yeah, say, early childhood development, you know, like what is a normal childhood? You know, all of a sudden I was in a class, mm-hmm, where, you know, we weren't just all recovering people, and there was a sort of guideline for what was normal. And believe me, I didn't come from it. Neither did most of the other people that I was sitting in the rooms with. Anyway, so we're at this big business meeting one day. It's just what you call, it's like an organizational meeting. And in a regular meeting, just one person talks and there's no crosstalk, so this would never have happened. That's why the service piece of the work comes into play. And in this particular room where we would have this, we'd have our meetings, but also we had the service meeting, there was a coffee station. And I just will never forget this. That's why I'm calling in, is with this story. I remember, mm-hmm, starting to notice that when there was stress or conflict, there were certain people who got up and left the table. They went to get some coffee.
Mm-hmm.
But see, you started to notice it wasn't an accident that they were getting up at that juncture. You could see their body language. It's like, uh-oh, here, Mom.
Right.
Like, I was saying to myself, wow, this is like replicating. Mom and Dad, yeah, are fighting, you know, those scenes at the dinner table. And it was like, mm-hmm, you could see that the people,
yeah,
who had that in their background, they, when that stress started at the table, they got up and, mm-hmm, went over to the coffee station, or they went outside, mm-hmm, to have a cigarette. And I think that,
right,
this is really crucial and really important, because there are still a lot, mm-hmm, of people who don't want to look at it. Recover, you have to say there's something,
right,
to recover from. You have to say
that's
there's,
right,
something to recover,
yep,
from in order to start recovering. So there has to be,
yep,
this breaking away of denial, and there must be an aspect of denial. I know there is personally. When my sister first confronted my mother about sexual abuse, she went to one of those memory people. I hate them so much,
mm-hmm,
I can't even remember what the correct term for them is. Okay?
Right.
But,
mm-hmm,
to say, and then had the family kind of turn against her. It's like...
Mm-hmm.
The,
yeah,
part of recovery,
yeah,
that's what I want to say to you, Mary Ellen, is like, you know, and Bill just came and said, so you haven't been here in a while. My experience has been when dealing with some of these things initially, you really need a strong support system, because,
yeah,
they come back at you. They're really protecting,
mm-hmm,
what was criminal,
right,
behavior.
Yeah. Well, listen, thank you so much for calling in, regular girl. We have 30 seconds left, okay? So I did want Marielle to give us a gem of what she thinks, you know, and she went through her abuse. And what do you want to say?
Sorry,
Marielle.
Okay.
No reason to apologize.
You're just running out of time tonight.
I want to thank each of you for allowing me this time and for being here and sharing